Top of the news this evening is speculation concerning the real facts behind the Department of Health announcement about a radioactive spill supposed to have occurred yesterday at the state nuclear plant.
I know what you're thinking. Mine's bigger than yours, right? It's not fair. Throw it away. All right?
Tell me about Disneyland.
They got tons of popcorn there.
Yeah.
And all you gotta do is go climb a tree to go eat it.
It was a night like any other night. Then something happened.
Oh, good Lord. It's unbelievable. It's horrible.
Welcome to the Really Awful Movies Podcast, a celebration of low-budget cinema.
The sleep of reason gives birth to monsters.
Hi, my name's Chris, and along with Jeff, we're bringing you the very best and worst of horror, sci-fi, post-apocalyptic wasteland, kung fu, and women in prison movies from the 1960s to today. Check us out at reallyawfulmovies.com, part of the Crypt TV family.
Who was that guy?
My new student.
Why? They say he was from L.A.
Yeah. So what?
I had a run-in with that guy. Did this. This. That.
What'd you fight about?
He was talking about how bad Seattle karate is. Yeah.
What?
Yeah, he was putting Seattle karate down in a big way and talking about how wonderful Los Angeles karate is. Then he started pushing me around and stuff.
And then the fight started?
Yeah. No, I didn't want to fight, but, you know, what was I supposed to do? It's pretty good, but the fight started.
From our downtown Toronto headquarters, here's episode 161, No Retreat, No Surrender.
Yeah, man. 1987's No Retreat, No Surrender. No retreat, baby, no surrender. And for fans of The Boss, that's of course...
Yeah, grab a tourniquet for your ears there. It's destroying the seminal work of Bruce Springsteen from Born in the USA.
That was a track from Born in the USA entitled No Surrender.
Great.
Great tune, still played live to this day. I do not think that was in any way inspirational for this movie.
No.
But they did sort of crib that. Well, I mean, it is sort of a cliche, no retreat, no surrender. Yeah. You got to give the boss is a great lyricist, but that was not one of his most sterling couplets ever.
Yeah, yeah.
But whatever. This is also called No Retreat, No Surrender. And that's, I think, a very good maxim for life.
It is.
You know, we should... never retreat nor surrender. And this movie does not retreat nor surrender to its awfulness.
It does not.
But it's a boss movie all the same.
It is a boss movie, and here from the confines of our downtown Toronto dojo podcasting headquarters, we just really wanted to get the word out about this movie because it is as canon can get, without being canon. So it shoots like a cannon, but has all the hallmarks of a bad canon movie, but isn't one. And it very well could be included in that same umbrella. And
if it looks like a canon, it shoots like a canon, but it isn't a canon, what is it? It's No Retreat, No Surrender. This is probably the most canon movie we've ever podcasted that's not a canon movie. This had to have been a canon movie.
Yeah.
But it's not a canon movie.
No.
But what it is, and this is very notable, it's notable for two things. Number one, it is the feature film debut, I'm talking speaking roles, because yes, he did play an extra in a crowd scene in Breaking 2. He cast as the Predator in the, you know, Samuel Schwarzenegger vehicle, but fired because they thought he was too slight, he was too small, but he was going to be the man, you know, wearing the suit and being, you know, with the dreadlocks and the Predator. This is the first speaking role, although he barely does speak, of... See, not many people... yeah. can be known just by initials. I mean, we talked earlier about, you know,
one name.
Yeah. You know, yeah, there's a lot more. You got your, what, you know, your Cher's, your Madonna's,
yeah, your Kanye's, Princes, whatever, yeah.
Kanye's, what have you. When it comes to your initials, I mean, I'm thinking like FDR, JFK, a couple presidents there, JYD,
yeah,
great wrestler from the 80s, and I don't know, NYC, New York City, I don't know what else.
Yeah.
But then we got another one we can add to that illustrious company. He's not a president. He's not a wrestler known for delivering headbutts that were so lethal that they would send his opponents flying out of the ring and yet not hurt him in any way whatsoever.
I never thought about that. Yeah.
Exactly. Like, why is it that when you butt somebody's head, it should be a reciprocal exchange of pain.
Yeah, yeah. What do they call that? The Glasgow kiss or something? I forget. Like a headbutt to the face. But I was also thinking the same thing with a drop kick. When you jump in the air and just land, like it'd be way worse to land and possibly throw your shoulder out or kill your back as a not... Forget about being a recipient. Unless they got your feet really high, they would never touch you in the face. But there are lots of kicks to the face in this movie.
But there's only ever one that I know of wrestler whose finishing maneuver was just a standard headbutt. Not a flying headbutt, just a headbutt.
And that was George the Animal Steel?
No, JYD.
Oh, JYD. Oh, okay. Yeah. It all comes full circle.
Maybe, well, that's what I'm saying. So, uh-huh. But, you see, so when it comes to the initials, those that are known only by their initials, we're going to add JCVD.
Yes.
This is the man, Jean-Claude Van Damme. Mm-hmm. And this, again, is his craptacular, wonderful, cinematic film debut. And not only is it that is notable for that, and that's enough, it also answers the age-old question that was plaguing the greatest minds up to that point, the greatest thinkers, the greatest sports historians.
Is personality nature or nurture?
Well, there's that as well. But isn't that more like double impact?
Yes. Whose karate is superior?
Whose karate is superior? Because I did not know that karate was a geographical thing.
No.
You know? But apparently...
Los Angeles? In one camp versus these upstarts from the Emerald City, best known for Microsoft and Starbucks.
And Seattle. Nirvana.
Oh, and Nirvana, yeah.
Crunch music.
So,
Seattle karate versus LA karate. Which one takes
who you got, yeah. And we know this is LA because we have this tedious, lingering shot of a dojo that is showing the Sherman Oaks, California karate school. And this camera is dumbly gazing at it for so long, it must be just completely imbued with significance that apparently it is.
Yeah, it was about a 60-second establishment shot at the marquee of the dojo. I was just watching it dumbfounded. Yeah. When is the camera going to move and show something else? And
finally, are we going to be tested on this later?
It pans down, and then the title just, "No Retreat, No Surrender."
Yeah.
And we go into the dojo, and we see that there is a class in session. And this is run by a karate expert by the name of Stillwell. You know, I guess he's the man when it comes to LA karate. And he's kind of a pretty nondescript looking guy. Almost reminds me a bit of Larry Bird, perhaps.
Yeah, yeah.
And his son is taking some lessons there, too. His son, whose name is Jason. Jason Stillwell, I would say, has got a very unhealthy obsession with Bruce Lee. What would you say?
Well, when it comes to, I guess, the requisite respect for one's opponent, that is the hallmark of karate and martial arts in general, you bow. This guy is not using karate techniques on this poor, hapless opponent. They're supposed to be sparring. He is reprimanded and scolded by his dad for using, I guess, Jeet Kune Do.
That's what he says. He goes, "This isn't Bruce Lee's Jeet Kune Do." As if that's some sort of terrible thing. It's karate.
Yeah,
or is it said karate?
Yeah.
Why do people say it like karate?
I don't know. But given my druthers, I would rather learn Bruce Lee's Jeet Kune Do than the shitty karate stances and those lame front punches that do absolutely nothing that you see in every movie where all the classes is punching in unison. But yeah, this is a classic setup.
Yeah.
The young teenage punk kid and his strict... heavy-handed dad.
By the book, and you would think that the life of a kid whose father happens to teach LA karate would be uneventful as it should be, but no, because this movie takes place in a world where the underworld figures.
In a world where, yeah, it's like those trailers.
Yeah. The mafiosi have nothing better to do than to shake down karate dojos. What strategic or financial
gain could come from
you know, from the karate dojo industry. This is not like the, you know, the debate in the Godfather, like, oh, should we get into the narcotics industry?
Yeah.
It's the fucking karate industry. Why do low-life mobsters have to shake down the karate industry?
I could only surmise that, like, the margins have to be, like, you know, Monty Python, like, wafer thin. Like, you have to rent so much space, and then you have to hire staff, and then you have to have all of your classes be hugely successful.
Maybe that's how they actually get these never-ending supply of henchmen that we see in other action movies, where it's just cannon fodder, one after cannon fodder. One movie after another.
Yeah, one greaser dupe after another to just eat fists. But really,
maybe,
like,
they shake down these dojos and then take.
Okay, the well,
the,
most them. Like, I was thinking of Roadhouse or some one of these other movies. They at least explain the motivations away as, like, maybe they need the property and they would strong arm him in order to give up his land so they could build a lucrative mall. But no, this is apparently this is the world's highest profit margin dojo ever. And sure enough, this guy is shaken down
but
by
not,
these
because apparently this is the only holdout in L.A. and then. He's going to take his plans for dojo domination
elsewhere. Well,
national, but we'll get to that later.
Yeah, these greasers come in and they try and, I guess, strong arm him. And
one of them being the Russian,
mm-hmm.
played by
JCVD,
the Spoke.
In a
white,
resplendent
white
suit with, like, brass buttons and a horrible mullet. Mm-hmm. Yeah, just early. Kick butt. He may have been too small for Predator, but he looked formidable here. Or as the French say in his native language, formidable. So this was great. So they're essentially run out of town by these goons. They cannot stick around.
Well, you're glossing over an incredible scene because he walks in there with these two henchmen. Mm-hmm. One guy looks a bit like Kenny Loggins.
Yeah.
And then you got JCVD.
Yeah.
And Stillwell
gets his ass handed to him.
Yeah, he gets destroyed. Ooh. He gets his leg broken. His son, Jason, who tries to interfere, tries on his father's behalf, gets a few. I mean, and that move that JCV did, I mean, that was incredible.
Yeah.
That kick.
Leaping over one of his bested henchmen to use him as leverage to spin
on
his shoulder. Yeah, amazing. Yeah.
That was something. That was awesome. I was watching it going, like, fuck yeah.
Yeah.
So it was such a bad, humiliating beatdown that screw LA Karate, we now...
Or screw opening up another dojo in somewhere else in LA. Like, he's been apparently just turfed out of the entire Los Angeles area.
Well, from what we understand, at this point, we're, I guess, literally all dojos in the Los Angeles, greater Los Angeles area...
Are mob run.
Yeah. So he needs to escape, and so...
Damn it, the stranglehold the Mafia has on the dojo community.
So in the next scene, we see the Stillwell family with a van and U-Haul leaving town. And where are they going?
Not far, by the looks of where they filmed this.
But that's true, but the movie takes great pains to introduce where they're actually heading to. Just in case there's any confusion in the viewer's mind as to where they're going to be resettling, first they show a road sign saying, to Seattle.
Yeah, and if that was too subtle
for
the
viewer. If that was too subtle, then they have stock footage of the Space Needle.
Yeah.
And if at this point viewers are still confused as to where they're going to resettle, you then have the subtitle at the bottom of the screen. Seattle.
Yeah.
So yes, we know. They are now located in Seattle. So Stillwell, his son Jason, his wife, Stillwell, still recovering from this horrendous beatdown.
It's still not well.
Still
not,
exactly.
And it seems like it's an absolutely insurmountable leg injury that will maybe prevent him from teaching karate ever again. Mm-hmm. As his leg is broken in two, like a wishbone. They settle down in lovely Seattle, and...
I don't even think he even wants to teach karate again. I think he's so humiliated.
Yeah, especially as he says, karate's not to be used aggressively. This as two guys are bearing down on him, ready to beat the living shit out of him. But eventually he overcomes the desire to use it peacefully and tries to fight back.
I mean, even if you use karate defensively, you know, because you're not supposed to go beyond the offense. You know, it's an honorable art, right? Mm-hmm. Even if you're using it defensively, you're still using it aggressively.
Yeah,
you're aggressively trying to defend yourself.
The best defense is a good offense.
How can somebody not use karate aggressively?
Just keep backing away and blocking until they get tired and walk away.
Well, as Dr. Phil would say, how's that working out for you?
How's that? Oh, I can't even do it, Dr. Phil, damn it. But then, really, as they're settling in their new hometown, who should come by but really the character that is the linchpin around which this film revolves. This is one of the great... action movie characters, even though he's not an action star. He's really like a thriller, Michael Jackson era dressed sidekick who's really, I mean, okay, we're going to talk about him at length because his character is so depressing. And so
depressing.
It's kind of, it's so sad
elevating.
How deferential he is and how useless
that's
he is.
That's true. He is useless.
And this is RJ.
He's always smiling. Every time I saw him on screen, my heart, it was like it was opposite of the Grinch. It wouldn't shrink 2 sizes, or it would grow. You know, my heart would grow. RJ is one of the most feel good characters in the history of cinema. This ever smiling, Jerry curled, young black gentleman who, as you said, this film came out in 87, at which point Michael Jackson was already like onto his bad phase. But this guy is bedecked in like the Thriller outfits. He's walking around wearing the white glove. I had that exact same glove, like replica white glove. It doesn't even have real sequins on it.
There's
a little iron on here. But yeah, RJ, this kid is hilarious. This is a kid that when we first see him, he's riding a bike carrying a boombox.
Of course, as one did in the 80s.
Did you do that in the 80s?
I did indeed.
Really?
With a pimp walk on, you know, on my shoulder with a backwards poor boy cap? Yeah. No, I really did not.
I
felt like I missed out on this, you know, on this subculture. Mm. But yeah, and they become fast friends. And
Jason and RJ.
Yeah, and RJ is the, you know, knows where everything is in town. He knows that where Bruce Lee is buried, which is handy to know. Takes him there, shows him around, shows him where the Seattle dojo is.
But don't forget, you know, when they meet, again, like, this is a sort of romantic comedies, but they meet cute, you know what I mean? In the sense that Jason is setting up his garage, putting up all his Bruce Lee memorabilia, and he's also playing a little basketball, and the basketball rolls out
of course.
And RJ grabs it and starts doing a little
breakdancing.
And then Jason utters something along the lines of, oh, that's bad. He's like, bad meaning good, of course. Yeah. Like, well, if you think that's bad, wait till you see this. And he just starts rapping.
Yeah, of course.
Rapping about Bruce Lee in the garage. He freestyles a rap about Bruce Lee. This is like this RJ. I mean, he's like Michael Jackson and Grandmaster Flash rolled into one.
He's a hype man, essentially.
Yeah. He freestyles a rap about Bruce Lee. But then, unfortunately, if we think that things are going to go well for Jason, I mean, forget about the fact that his father was humiliated and destroyed in a karate dojo beatdown back in L.A., and now he's got to resettle in a new town.
And with his tail between his legs, under his gi, he had to, yeah, just keep, completely pick up and leave, disgraced.
There's a nemesis. Yeah. And this is one of the most incongruous nemesises, I don't know.
Because they don't explain away his hatred.
There's no backstory.
Yeah.
He's just got this intense, burning hatred for RJ.
Yeah, and Jason, who he calls Brucey, and he just wants to see them, I guess, what?
He's just this fat kid who lives next door.
Yeah, and he is essentially like channeling Conan O'Brien's sidekick, Andy Richter, and he has a hose and hides behind like a hedge and springs it on RJ and pounces on him and tries to beat him up. RJ flees on his skateboard. He's basically the town bully who's got a cadre of like-minded people, that including a woman, strangely enough, and they plot to beat up RJ and Jason in a burger joint. So why? There's something about him that bugs him. That's, fair enough. Yeah. He bugged me too in a little way, but not enough. A little bit. He's an annoying figure. Likewise, Brucey, but not enough to like this intense, burning hatred he had for.
That's what I'm saying. There was some sort of backstory that must have been cut.
Maybe the prequel. You know, we'll address that. And so what we got here is another dojo, because you got to keep training in your karate. And RJ introduces him to Seattle karate, it becomes more clear whose karate geographically will dominate. We get a little sense of how the dojo in LA operates. Now we got the one in Seattle, and poor Jason, he's not only subject to bullying by this fat lard ass, as he calls him, Scott, but they bully him in the
Scott
dojo too.
Yes, yeah.
Mm-hmm. They bully him in the dojo as well, because
Scott is actually a student at the dojo.
Yeah, and
because first things are hunky dory. He walks in there. There's a guy named Dean. Actually, the dojo was run by a guy named Riley, who's a champ. But he's currently touring, competing in tournaments. And he walks in. Dean's like, "Yeah, sign up, you know.
Yeah, nice to meet you. Nice, where are you from? Where did you train? Yeah.
Exactly. And then this fat shithead Scott plants the seed
of discontent, saying that he started a fight with them, and that also he was maligning the good name of Seattle Karate.
Yeah, exactly. Bruce Lee was from Seattle.
Yeah, he lived and went to the University of Washington.
And he was buried in Seattle.
So
Seattle Karate would basically be Bruce Lee, and this guy loves Morpheus Bruce Lee.
Putting that aside, yeah, for sure. Yeah,
you can't see it, but I'm just going, whatever.
Yeah. A two-handed dismissal in the air. It's almost like a... You know, kate and karate. But, yeah, and they pit the best Seattle has to offer to...
And this guy is good.
He is damn good. Well, everyone's good in this movie, but, well, from a technical martial arts standpoint, if not for the execution of excellence in terms of acting. But, yeah, they get the most badass of the badass ripped brother to just beat the living shit out of Jason and establish the supremacy of Seattle karate in front of all... members of the dojo.
And they keep taunting him. He's no longer named Jason. He's now henceforth referred to as L.A. Karate. How do you like that, L.A. Karate? How do you like that, beat down L.A. Karate? How does that feel, L.A. Karate?
Yeah. And of course, this is set against the backdrop of his struggles at home. His home life is not stable because Pops has gone into the dumper a little bit because... He walks with a cane.
He's convalescing. He can no longer practice his trade.
Yeah. He has to work in the shitty bar.
He had to turn tail and run from... Oh, he had the bar. Oh, my God.
And again...
He's being taunted in the bars.
And, oh, yeah. But he maintains his steely dedication to...
Not fighting. Basically, this movie's called No Retreat, No Surrender, but he maintains his dedication to retreating and surrendering at every point. And him and his son do not have a good relationship because his son, he's coming back with bruises and indications of getting into fights, and him and his father have these tremendously histrionic battles culminating in one scene where this is the worst scene you can possibly do. He tears down his
Bruce Lee
poster.
Yeah. Them's fighting words. No, or not fighting, as the case may be.
Which causes basically running into the night, not knowing where he's going until he stumbles across ever-smiling RJ, and they go to the grave. We're not making this up. They go to the grave of Bruce Lee.
Yeah, the one scene that was actually filmed in Seattle, because there's palm trees everywhere in Seattle. Mm. But yeah, they actually go to the gravesite, and he's moved, and he looks to the spirit of the late martial artist for inspiration.
He's asking the spirit of Bruce Lee for guidance. But not just guidance, he's asking him for assistance. He wants the ghost of Bruce Lee to rise from his eternal slumber and help him in this struggle against Scott and Dean and... Oh, because there's also a girl. There's a love triangle. There's that, too.
Oh, of course, because the second-in-command at the dojo has eyes on Jason's girl. To the point where they
Jason's girl.
Yeah, to the point where they, you know, no rapprochement is met, and they come to loggerheads at this party where they're fighting over this girl, but really it's Jason's girl, and the sensei guy says... she's mine, and plants a kiss on her, which is pretty aggressive and pretty, you know, pretty icky. And to which Jason replies, and this is great because this is, you could relate to this on every level as a 17-year-old. I don't see a ring on her finger. Is this what 17-year-olds, is this how they talk? Like, you can't tell, like, she's single, man. She doesn't have a ring on her finger. Bizarre.
But you think that's... I mean, that's...
that's bad.
Barely stretches her from bizarre.
Maybe 10 years hence, that could have...
That's semi-bizarre, but there's two other things that are way more bizarre than that. Number one, the same mobsters that were shaking down L.A. Karate are now... coincidentally, because it could be... You know, there's other geographical places they could... They're closer.
Yeah,
they,
San Diego or something. Yeah, San Francisco.
They decide to shake down Seattle Karate. Yeah. So now, we have this threat. And there's the Russian, KCBD, the Kane Loggins looking guy, etc. Mm. I mean, again, I did not know that this was such a lucrative trade. You know, karate dojos. Yeah. But more than that, our man Jason, who up to this point, is not that great a fighter. That's why. Like, it's, you know... He actually makes Ralph Macchio look tough.
True.
In Karate Kid, the beginning of Karate Kid, Ralph, I've never seen a movie character get beaten down more than Ralph Macchio at the beginning, basically throughout the entirety of Karate Kid, until he does that fucking crane kick at the end. Yeah. But no, I mean, he gets his beat down again and again and again. His father's no support. He's now moved to some sort of shed that RJ sets him up in with all his Bruce Lee memorabilia.
To be used solely for workout montages.
Yes, of which there are many in this movie. And then all of a sudden, these great beams of light come through the window, and who should be standing there but the corporeal form of one Bruce Lee, who is now going to train Jason in the art of
Jeet Kune Do or whatever it is. Yeah.
Now, are you an expert on Bruce Lee? Do you know much about Bruce Lee? Like, I know some, but I know.
A little bit.
Did he take on many students?
He was reluctant because his theory was, because he only, I guess, bestowed his knowledge on three teachers who carried on his tradition, because he didn't want volume, he wanted quality. This is certainly not the case in Seattle Dojo. Well, they have like 50 students there.
Because this guy, it would seem to me to be about as unworthy of Bruce Lee's tutelage as you can get. Never mind the fact that this is a movie where you got Bruce Lee posters all over the place. They go to the grave of Bruce Lee, there's a picture of Bruce Lee on his headstone, and then they cast an actor that doesn't look a wit, an iota. He looks about as close to Bruce Lee as
maybe
I do.
You do, yeah. Exactly. We had a good accent, I'll give him that. So even if they just took some Korean guy and stuffed him in there, he was capable enough, right? And so he puts him through
the
paces.
And he's even a less difficult teacher than Mr. Miyagi. Mr. Miyagi at least was...
Sure. Wait, if you want to compare like the two movies, I would say that the star here, what is his name? McKinley? The actor who played Jason Stilwell? He actually earned a black belt in karate and was a competitive kickboxer, whereas Ralph Macchio had zero martial arts background. So an interesting factoid, but regardless.
But in Karate Kid, you had wax on.
Oh, yeah, wax off. Yeah.
Here you have
glass on, glass off.
Glass of Diet Coke versus glass of water.
Yeah.
Somehow.
Yeah, yeah. The
demarcate knowledge versus.
Versus, it's like a, you know, John Locke, tabula rasa. So in one glass is the empty vessel that represents Jason's pitiful 3 years of karate, where he has, I don't know what belt he has, but he's not very good. And then the Diet Coke, full to the brim, represents the knowledge
this
that Bruce
knowledge
Lee has. And he pours it into the other glass. And
so basically he would be diluting the knowledge.
No, I never thought about it that way. Yeah. You take a Diet Coke and make it even worse by adding tons of water.
Yeah. Well, this is a diluted action movie in many ways. Yeah. Except near the last third is pretty fucking kick. This is a kick-ass movie. Come on, RJ's awesome. But
oh, yeah. It's really incredible. So, yeah, you get these elaborate training montages.
Power.
Yeah.
Power.
Yeah.
This is Bruce Lee's, you know, it's all mantra. Wax on, wax off. It's key power.
And he shows them, you know, how to, I guess, catch a leg. And then because this is such a common occurrence in combat sports, that you have to be able to know how to knock out your opponent with your free leg that you happen to be standing on, teaches him that move, takes punching bags, whips them at Jason so he knows how to duck, teaches him the particulars of an upside-down spinning back heel kick.
That was very 36-chamber Shaolin.
Yeah, yeah.
Heavy really cool stuff. Heavy bags to the head. Yeah, and then of course, and then there we cut to an incongruous scene of RJ and Jason in a
even
dance
more
club.
Where
he's totally bedecked in the Thriller era, more like the We Are the World era. Jackson, where he's wearing that sparkly, spangly jacket with the what do you call those things on the shoulders with the tassels hanging down.
Oh my God, I don't know, but he looked like some sort of Napoleonic general or something. And yeah, and
that's
this
where
is
he's wearing the he's got that. You know, dollar store one glove that I had as a kid. And, of course, he's busting a move on the dance floor.
Oh, yeah, and the crowd is completely offbeat, and they're clapping, which just made me laugh so hard. But, again, this is a feel-good martial arts movie, so ultimately it's all about the training montages and the ultimate showdown between good and evil.
Okay, so here's the thing. So, he's getting trained, and again, you know, this is not me making this up. He is under the tutelage of the ghost of Bruce Lee. That is something I was not expecting. I was not expecting Jason to be, you know, I was expecting maybe get some inspiration from Bruce Lee, to maybe study some movies, read some books, but that he would be trained by the ghost of Bruce Lee. That's fucking crazy. There's a supernatural element in this, right? But I'm thinking to myself, but what's he being trained for? Just to beat Dean's ass down so he can get this girl Kelly?
Yeah.
Well, yes, there is this other thing going on with the Goombas, the
yeah, the greasers,
who,
yeah.
Who take down the dojos. But I must have drifted off for a second because, or something, because all of a sudden this tournament mm-hmm. is being put on.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
this is a tournament of Seattle Karate.
Oh, we neglected to mention the third geographical locale represented here against New York City Karate.
Yeah. Yeah.
Who will reign supreme? Well, I guess the greasers are involved in a fix. So they are financially backing. I researched this because I dozed off at that exact same point. They have...
Not to be telepathically linked.
Yeah. They make the Manhattan Maulers heavy... betting favorites.
Was that their name?
That was their
name.
I think
we're down the Manhattan Ballers.
Either one. They were balling for Maulers. And these guys are tough as hell. And this is also actually a little bit of realism, too, because allegedly, when Sonny Liston fought Muhammad Ali, then Cassius Clay, Sonny Liston took a dive for the mob. So combat sports is notorious for being in hawk with the seedy elements of the mafia. So these mafia guys are backing this tough team of Guido Latino types from New York, stereotypes. And they have heavy wagering on them. And this is a big tournament set up, but with them against Seattle's own.
This is for the heart and soul of Seattle Karate.
Mm-hmm.
And it's two teams. You got the Manhattan Maulers,
very warriors.
Versus Seattle Sidekicks.
Yeah, it's just
how pathetic it is.
It's really pathetic. Yeah.
And I love it because the Seattle Sidekicks consists of Frank,
the guy who runs the dojo, who is Riley, who's the champion, who's got an incredibly hirsute, hairy chest,
mm-hmm. And Dean.
Right? Yeah, yeah.
Frank was the black guy that kicked the shit out mm-hmm. of Jason earlier. Riley and Dean, three formidable fighters. Not Scott, I wonder why, the big fat guy, the adversary.
Yeah. The guy that you couldn't make weight, I guess.
At one point in the film, you actually see him eating grass, and that's another note. I don't know why. But the Manhattan Maulers, you got your Kenny Loggins guy, you got some other dude, I don't even know who he was, and you got the Russian, you got JCV.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, I mean, and I guess they... An extra challenge is thrown down. The gauntlet is thrown down for who can beat Ivan. Is Ivan the terrible actor in this case? And the Maulers, they're pretty evenly matched against the Seattle Sidekicks, but none of them can take out the power of Ivan. And Ivan fights dirty, a la WWE. He ties, I think, the Seattle champ in the turnbuckle with. What was it? Some piece of rope that he tied him
in
there?
It was a chain with a lock.
Oh, okay, yeah. And then he just beat the living shit out of him with body punches. And I gotta say, too, with all the karate stances and the front punches that they were doing, mm-hmm. karate is useless when it comes to combat sports. Because when it comes down to it, they're using kickboxing techniques. They're not using this wah, wah, wah of the front punch karate. That all stuff has gone out the window. So forget what they learned in the dojo. They're wailing on each other mm-hmm. with like haymakers. So it was great. But Ivan is
he's a
formidable force.
When Frank took him on, I was like, okay, this will be a good fight. Because Frank, he quit himself pretty well earlier in the movie. He just got destroyed. He got his ass kicked. And in many ways, this was shades of Rocky IV. Because it reminded me, whereas Ivan Drago was this unstoppable force with no respect for any sort of rules of propriety or engagement. It was the same with Ivan, and he's throwing the referee hither and fro, and he's just this monster tying people up in ropes and flipping them upside down and pulling the living crap out of them. So, I mean, look what this film is. I mean, it is a mix between The Karate Kid with elements of Breaking 2, including one of their dancers, that'd be Dean, and Rocky IV. It's mind-blowing B-movie nirvana.
Oh, yeah.
But ultimately, somebody has to take out. Somebody has to be your Rocky Balboa. Someone's going to have to step up and take out this monster, Ivan the Russian.
And who would it be, of course, but Jason, who wasn't even good enough, I guess, to make the Seattle Sidekicks team. He's in the crowd. They put out a call for anyone who thinks they can challenge this Russian tough. He answers the bell.
And at this point, the ghost of Bruce Lee is long gone.
Oh, yeah.
In the final third, he disappears.
Yeah.
He gave him his cup of Diet Coke and just walked away.
And yet he was able to impart the incredible wisdom that comes from the spinning upside down kick that eventually takes out Ivan. So he served his purpose. And there you have it.
No retreat, baby.
No surrender.
Don't forget that when things looked really bad for Jason when I looked like Ivan was going to beat the shit out of him. There was ever smiling RJ in the audience.
To yell the catchphrase.
To yell, no retreat, no surrender. And that was the impetus. That's what it took for him to marshal the superhuman strength and the knowledge.
Who needs a corner man saying, like, keep your left hand up and watch out for the jab and the right cross?
You need
a catchphrase.
All you need is a Jerry Curl, break dancing, Michael Jackson idolizing, one glove wearing, 5'3". 98-pound kid named RJ to yell out, no retreat, no surrender.
Amazing, amazing.
And he had some stalker qualities too, this RJ. Did you notice that?
He did, yeah.
He was always peeping around. Every time Jason was somewhere, there was RJ kind of looking in the window and giggling and smiling. It's kind of creepy.
They did have a sort of a homoerotic tension between the two. There's one point where Jason is getting ready for his date with this pompadoured, poodle-haired amour there. And he tries to fix his hair for him and... He says, oh, don't touch the hair, man. And then in another fantastic scene, which is just great. I saw this on YouTube where at the 1 hour mark, one of the commenters on YouTube just said, gay. And I thought, okay, what in God's name is he referring to? So I went up to the 1 hour mark, 103 or whatever it was. And Jason is doing this kind of sit-up routine where he's straddling a bench.
That's what RJ's sat on his stomach.
And, yeah, and RJ is sitting on his abs while he's doing these sit-ups.
No, but he's doing
right on his pelvis.
But that was what I was saying earlier about creepy, weird, ever-smiling RJ always snooping and peeping around because Jason is doing these push-ups where he's between straddling two benches and he's pushing himself up and down and he's focused on this training activity. Mm-hmm. And... dun, 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 dun. I don't know, I'm trying to use some sort of like sneaky peepy music. All of a sudden, RJ just comes sneaking around, and he doesn't just sit on his belly. He leaps on his belly.
Pelvis, yeah. And then he continues to do his sit-ups.
And they roll around in the ground, they're laughing.
It's
they roll around in the ground, laughing. What did you learn from this movie?
Oh, my God. Well, incredibly cobbled-together plot. So not only do you have... an incredible exposition voiceover of the father of Jason, bemoaning his fate as the mafia is closing in on him, and he's basically outlining his objections and his worries and his fears as a voiceover exposition. Also, there's terrific out-of-nowhere scenes that reference scenes that the viewer is not privy to wit, Jason buying a gift for his girlfriend, which is a little bunny. And he says to her at one point, or she says to him, pardon me, oh, it's that bunny from the pet store the other day. And we never saw this the other day. So there's tons of scenes like this just referencing things that we were not privy to.
I always feel bad when I see animals in movies being given as gifts and they're placed in boxes, covered in bows. And I'm always thinking, that poor animal, how long were they placed in that box waiting for it to be opened?
It's like being kidnapped and thrown in the trunk. Like,
exactly.
It's so evil.
I don't think there's a dish of water or a plate of food for the animal just sitting there. Probably shitting all over the place.
Oh my God, I didn't want to think about it.
That's always the way it is. They open up the box, pull out the animal.
Yeah, and it's instantly cute without poop stains all over
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
Oh. And I also learned that you can never have too many montages of one-armed push-ups. So that was just another incredible.
Now, I was doing a little research myself, scant research for this one, but I did read that was accomplished... Because this Jason guy, he's pretty, he brings the goods. Mm-hmm. He's fit. He's got the moves. Yeah, he was feigning, incompetence early. But that one, was it a one-fingered push-up at one point?
Oh, I'm not sure. But yes. One, anyway, I can barely do two hands. So
that was accomplished with the use of wires. So there was some...
Oh.
Yes, there was some movie trickery involved. Oh. But there was many a montage in this movie. This was rich and replete with montage. Montage mania.
Yeah. And what else did you learn?
Are you asking me?
Yeah.
Okay, well...
As I know you're going to bring up the wooden dolly. And
no, I wasn't going to.
Oh, okay. I don't even know what it's called, but it's a prominent feature of the Shaw Brothers movies and training montages generally. It looks like a hat rack or a coat rack. It's this brown...
Well, it could do double duty, basically.
Yeah, probably could, depending on how many hats you own. And it's just this wooden, piece with all these limb appendages on it that you use to strike, and then you, I guess, you practice different punches on it, and that this is maligned by the Andy Richter Scott bully character as, what are you doing with your silly wooden dolly or whatever, but he's one to talk, he gets his ass beat constantly. But so many things to learn in this movie.
Well, you know, I mean, this is not something I learned, this is something we didn't discuss. I mean, we were talking about the bar earlier. I learned that Per Stillwell is one of the, the father. He's one of the most pathetic characters in the movies because he gets verbally beaten down by his bar patrons who are insulting him.
Yeah.
And
he's just a pushover in total because he just lets these drunk bar denizens just put their unfinished drinks right on the billiards table, which is a major no-no because it could spill and ruin the $1,000 table. He's just called out constantly, but he sticks true to his word. I guess
he retreats and surrenders until finally he can't do it anymore. Yeah. He's cornered, and Jason steps into the fray and helps him beat down these barflies.
Yeah, these toughs. Yeah.
Another thing I learned, and I'm somewhat surprised you didn't bring this up, but you know, every action hero worth their salt has their trademark. For Seagal, it was a snapping of the limbs. For Schwarzenegger, it was always, you know, the catchphrase, right? The hasta la vista, the I'll be back, you know, what have you. For Van Damme, his trademark was
the splits.
The splits. Yeah. And how could you have a Van, even though this is a very nascent, almost incoherent Van Damme.
Almost, yeah, almost. If I knew what that meant. Yeah, exactly.
Use the word properly. I think it means sort of like...
No, that's fantastic. And yeah, he does do what he became famous for. So this showcased early, young, up-and-coming, blossoming talent in his own corner, in the ring, doing these splits.
After a beatdown, he goes and jumps. All we can say is the turnbuckle, the corner, yeah. And does a pair of splits on the
on the ring ropes. Fantastic stuff.
Unbelievable. So we got a movie with the ghost of Bruce Lee training a guy in the arts of martial, which are the best arts they are.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
We got a jerry-curled Michael Jackson wannabe who breaks out into rap and...
Popping
and locking at a moment's notice at the drop of a hat.
Yeah.
And we got Jean-Claude Van Damme. How could this movie be anything less than a 4-star classic?
Oh, I agree. Not to mention Seattle being just replete with palm trees and sunlight, the likes of which the gray northwestern city has never seen. Amazing stuff.
Are you implying this was not filmed in Seattle?
I'm definitely implying that. Yeah, but just amazing stuff. I was filled with joy. Like, it made me feel like a kid. Because for as many parallels as there are to Karate Kid, the fight scenes are actually quite spectacular. It's just the stuff around it that doesn't really hold together, but you got it. I'm not going to give it anything less than 4-star. This is a black belt movie in my books.
And one which I couldn't recommend more highly. And You mentioned earlier you were watching this on YouTube. This is in the public domain.
Yes.
This is one of those movies that you'll always see in like one of those boxes like you bought for the horror movies, but it says action movies. And it's always like, Jean-Claude Van Damme is in a movie. You're thinking, oh, am I getting a Bloodsport? Am I getting a kickboxer? No, you're getting No Retreat, No Surrender. So this is in the public domain. So, you know, feel free to watch it on YouTube. We always like to encourage people to pay for their entertainment, but in this case, if it's in the public domain,
feel free
to yourself to watch No Retreat, No Surrender.
Yeah, and you owe it to yourself to check out our website.
Well, we're not going to retreat.
No.
Nor will we surrender.
No.
And I'm not going to surrender singing either, even though it's terrible.
Even though people want you to retreat and surrender on that front. Check us out. www.reallyawfulmovies.com. And of course, follow us on Twitter, awful_movies, and we'll talk to you soon.
Take care.